Hey, welcome to another episode of Subscription Radio. I'm your host, DJ Fish, a.k.a. Ben Fisher, a.k.a. Not So Slim Shady. With me, we have a very special guest, Matt Mullinex, founder of Puron. Very happy, excited to have you on the show, man. And I know you're just a stone's throw away in Brooklyn.
That's right. Thanks for having me, Ben. I'm super excited to chat.
Awesome. So before we turn on the record button, Matt and I were sort of nerding out and talking about just a little bit around what's been top of mind for their brand. We started talking a little bit about different types of subscription experiences. One thing that came up and sort of like the way I'd like to open it up with is, can you talk a little bit, Matt, around like, what do you currently subscribe to? Like, what are your subscriptions?
Honestly, not many in CPG, which is crazy. You know, I have the usual Spotify, Netflix of sorts, but you know, we were kind of casually talking about this. You know, I think one of the biggest pain points for me that I see with a lot of brands in particular is kind of solving for ARR or metrics internally in and around subscription versus focusing purely on customer trust, loyalty, and brand building, creating really interesting value props, creating convenience opportunities. So whenever I see those kind of missing from the equation, you know, that for me is a pretty big red flag. So I'm not a huge subscriber necessarily to a lot of stuff.
That's interesting. Are there products that you don't subscribe to, but you buy habitually in CPG?
Coffee is one, oddly enough. However, my wife is usually the driving force behind that. So it's kind of like she says jump, I say how high. So sometimes we're on one brand, then we're on the next a few weeks later, but we're ordering coffee pretty frequently. We do have a Thrive subscription, oddly enough. So we do order a lot of groceries off of Thrive. But I think coffee is probably like a steady state for us. You know, luckily for our bathroom, like we're pretty well stocked in Huron, so we don't need any personal care subscriptions on that front. But I know this is a category that people tend to subscribe to. But yeah, I think our base is kind of covered on the commodities front there.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think even in my own life. So we have like, I have a dog who I don't trust in our house, or my wife and I don't trust in the house. So we have doggy diapers from Amazon, which is like, it's gotten to the point where she's like an adorable dog running around in diapers. I try to ignore the reason why she has her diaper on. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, there's like coffee. Yeah, it's because even the idea of subscribing to shampoo is interesting because my assumption is that you need your shampoo, right? So if you run out of it, you're likely, I mean, my assumption is that's actually one of those weird moments where the customer is very vulnerable to potentially switching to whatever their habit was before using your brand, right? They go to like the local CVS because they don't want to smell like, I guess, just dry water. So I am curious, how have you guys approached your subscription experience? And like, to what extent has that been an issue of someone running out? Because I think we oftentimes talk about like people getting too much product, but in your particular category, it would seem that like running out would actually be dangerous because that's the moment that someone would switch. And then they have a bunch of shampoo from another brand, right? And it kind of breaks up the cycle.
It's such a fine line of the spectrum of I cancel because I have too much product and you guys missed the reminder window. So now I've had to go out and buy my own. So we've kind of decided internally is we know kind of by SKU what the typical replenishment rate is on a median base, on an average base, et cetera. And we've set our auto delivery replen rates default to 30 days. But are very upfront and proactive in the communication beforehand. So there's a 3-day notification, there's a day before notification. So we're giving people an opportunity to postpone a week, postpone 2 weeks, skip this month, et cetera. But what we wanted to do was not miss that window because at the end of the day, it's very difficult to determine the discrepancies in usage and throughput rates. You know, we were chatting before this. You could be a trainer at your local gym and shower at your house 3 times a day, and maybe you're going through stuff every 2 or 3 weeks. Or you could be a consultant, be on the road for 5 days a week, and you're going through the stuff every 2 months. So we don't want to miss the window on the former, and we don't want to annoy the latter. So what we try to do is kind of, again, default to that 30 days, but be super proactive in our communication efforts to say, we just want to make sure that you have what you need. We're not here to annoy you. If you need to skip, like, go for it. You determine the iterations that we skip or postpone, but we want to, again, make sure that you're not hopping into the shower, you know, showering or shampooing or washing with soap bubbles, trying to make the most of it, or putting some water in the bottle and shaking it around a little bit and pretending like there's stuff in there that's not water. But yeah, it's definitely a fine line.
Have you experimented with any ways of almost trying to like get insight into the, we'll call it the persona, right? Where you could almost like have like a type form where literally the example you gave, which was how often do you shower? Are you go to, do you go to the gym? I mean, maybe you ask more like general questions of like, are you very active? Do you work out frequently? Like what, or do you travel a lot? Have you guys done anything around that to try to get some qualitative insight into the person?
All the time. At least we're sending a survey a quarter and it's very segmented. So we have thousands and thousands of data points in and around not only usage rate, but also professions, activity level, et cetera. I still think at the end of the day, like a dispensing of a body wash amount can still be subjective literally on every shower. So that's why the jumbos have actually performed really, really well, because there's more of like a better understanding, at least on our end, around projected throughput rate. But when someone buys a jumbo, they could be buying it for themselves or they could be buying it for their family of four, right? Again, like it's very hard to determine some of these things. So I think the position that we've kind of taken and drawn the line in the sand around is we want to solve for not missing that opportunity to replen with the mindset of ultimately putting the customer first, so not annoying that customer. Like we would, as customers, wouldn't want to receive 15 emails around, hey, you ready to reorder? Reorder here, do this, da-da-da. Or conversely, making it impossible to cancel or postpone. So now all of a sudden you have 16 months worth of shampoo built up in your linen closet. Like that's a horrible experience as well. But yeah, so like not missing that window, but being pretty proactive in communications to kind of manage that relationship.
Which is interesting. So I think that ties into something you and I were another thing you and I were talking about, which was the relationship, or at least the way that you and the company think about lifetime value of a customer, where I think I'd mentioned to you that what's interesting is a lot of brands that I've spoken with are like, oh, we want lifelong customers. But when you really dig into it, what they want is they'd rather have someone buy, like get an extra shipment and then cancel in the first 90 days, rather than actually have someone be like, know what? Maybe I just want this thing delivered every quarter. If that doesn't fit their, we'll call it their payback period. Yeah, they'd rather just like do the math. Like for them, it's a math exercise, which on one hand, it's interesting. Like it's like, I'll judge you by what you do, not what you say. Because a lot of these people are like, oh yeah, we're consumer centric. We care about the customer. And then when you dig into it, you're like, oh no, we want them to buy one more time. Could you expand a little bit on at least what your philosophy around there was? That was actually, it was unique and I appreciated it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, one of the things we had discussed briefly before was kind of those two initiatives aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. I think a lot of our flows are in and around trying to get people in the fold on a quarterly basis, because that's how we think our throughput and usage rate, I mean, that should be kind of very much in line for someone to re-up. But yes, to your point, we want to make sure that the customer is ready for the next shipment, and we're totally fine skipping, postponing, what have you, to kind of foster that better long-term relationship. You know, historically, this has been a very, no pun intended, sticky category where this guy might be a 10 to 15 to 20 year Old Spice or Dove for Men user who has entrusted us with his wallet and his personal care routine. So if we roll out the red carpet to that customer, we could, in theory, have a 5 or 10 year customer, which is super, super exciting for us. So it doesn't make sense, to push super hard to the point where at day 75, this customer is churning because we're the annoying body wash company. But one of the things that we enacted a few months ago, which has been really, really fun to kind of examine over time, is this notion of whale watching, we call it, which folks who have a higher propensity to spend more in a 90-day period and 180-day period, based on certain milestones or constituents met on first order. So AOV of X percent more than regular AOV, or includes one of 3 to 5, let's call it, certain SKUs in the initial assortment tried. We know that those folks have a higher propensity to A, come back within 90 days, and B, spend more over those individual purchases. So we actually create unique flows, you know, upselling other categories, talking about the benefits of what they purchased. Is almost like testing grounds to figure out, hey, can we replicate what we've done here to kind of the broader customer set, knowing what opportunities, you know, could exist. I mean, we have customers who are 7, 8, 9 times customers of ours who don't know that we have face wash, for instance, right? So it's like, wow, that's like a huge opportunity that, you know, we're underselling. So we're constantly learning about what our customer does, sees on site, how they use our products, and we're refining the scope and the strategy, then tactics to obviously get people back into the fold on a regular basis, but also when they're ready to do so.
So there's two pieces of that. One of which is you're observing existing customer behavior to look at and identify the whales. I am curious, have you run any experiments of almost trying to do the reverse, where driving the behavior that is reflected of the whales?
It's a great question. And the short answer is yes. So I think in kind of peeling back layers of the onion, we quickly realized that whales year to date had a certain tendency to be purchasing similar products with or without on discount, just tons of like purchase makeup, if you will. Like, what are some of the things that are happening in a consistent buying pattern? And then in turn, how do we kind of amend or kind of slightly modify the site so that when a new customer, net new eyeballs come to the site, they're seeing a product assortment, featured products, et cetera, that we know tend to, again, breed kind of this type of behavior. So after, you know, we're continually refining the scope and saying like, okay, like here's the next cohort of whales. Like, what are the similarities? Like, wow, it's that they're buying X and they're spending Y. So that impacts cart upsell opportunities, that impacts cross-sell opportunities. And it just kind of, again, like, there is no finish line to this exercise. So we're constantly getting better and refining and tweaking not only things that we're messaging post-purchase, but also, you know, the first three beats of the homepage, or how do we organize our PLPs or category pages, just so that we're continually refining and trying to really grow that whale base versus letting it happen organically on its own.
And when you're analyzing and looking for this behavior, I'm curious, like, what tools are you using? I mean, is it as simple as that you're like segmenting by SKU? And I don't know what you use for analytics. And if you have a BI tool or...
I'd like to say we have some like crazy built custom database, but it's good old fashioned Excel. I think that's one of the benefits of having some recovering financiers on the staff is there's not an F1 key in sight. There's a lot of Excel horsepower here. Now, we've definitely gotten to a point where, like, wow, every time we try and open this model, it crashes everyone's computer. So now there's like multiple models that are running these things. But we have looked at a few different analytics tools and platforms. And I think there's so many amazing options on the market today that are doing so many amazing things for like off-the-shelf reporting and just getting very high-level stuff accomplished very quickly. I think where we're seeing there's a slight void is that second, third, fourth degree of granularity that we want to dig into, whether it be whale watching, whale breeding, what have you, getting to know the customer at that super intimate level.
You have an entire like vocabulary around the orcas.
We started talking about this a few months ago and just like the words just kept like, should we call this harpooning? Well, that's bad. We don't want to kill whales. And like, we're a vegan and cruelty-free brand. So that's kind of like antithetical to who we are. So then it became more like breeding and supporting. But yeah, a huge vernacular around that. But I think, you know, I think the point being is we have not yet found something that can off the shelf produce kind of the level of granularity that we're gunning for. And I think that's really where the points of differentiation lie. Like, the devil really is in the details. And I think until we find that, we're pretty comfortable in managing a lot of this stuff on our own.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting, because I do think that's one of the pieces too, where people, because especially with insights like that, it reminds me a little bit of like Facebook's thing, right? Where like basically you want to get people to five friends and then at that point they won't leave. It's almost like you're looking at the behavior of your customers, identifying the ones who are best, then trying to suss out what are the actual defining behaviors or characteristics as opposed to just the noise. So were you looking for that specifically? Like, did you create a project where we're like, we're going to find the, we'll call it like the heaviest consumers and try to reverse engineer? Or was it something that just kind of someone randomly, you just observed, you're like, oh wow, this is weird?
No, it was definitely more on the intentional side. I mean, I think for us, in another concept we have chatted before previously, we've had a pretty big emphasis around retention, really from time zero. We've kind of crafted this mantra internally around finish line first, which again, if we're fortunate enough to get a customer to join the Huron journey after switching from one of these mass market products for a decade's worth of use, like, how do we make sure that they stick with us? So even in this like crazy economic cycle where interest rates are increasing and whatnot, and people are crying about Facebook and attribution and all this stuff, like, there still exists the other side of the equation, which is folks who are already your customers. And I think that's where the lion's share of our attention has been since we launched. So yes, while, you know, we're still facing all the noise and headwinds that the rest of the industry is facing on the acquisition side, a lot of our efforts to date have still been deployed on the other side of the equation. And I think that's allowed us to tap into that base, to get to know our customers better, and being like a more of a business decision from the onset versus like, oh, wow, like the macroeconomic climate's like throwing us a curveball. Like, let's focus on retention. That's really been part of our core DNA since launch.
I'm curious, what's your org? What's your, I almost said orca chart. What's your org chart? No, like, yeah. What are the different positions you guys have internally?
Yeah. So we're a pretty lean team. We're only five. So it's myself and my co-founder, Matt. So Matt handles almost everything, product side, supply chain side, packaging, design and development. His background is he was, you know, 20 plus years at Estee Lauder running product development, corporate innovation. So he's kind of our product maestro. And I think that really sets us apart from a lot of our competitors is just like actual product quality. A funny aside, we've had one particular competitor order from us like probably around 10 times to the point where like I've actually hand delivered the order on a few different occasions with like a follow-up note, you know, thanks so much for your continued support. So that's certainly like a tip of the cap to, I think, product quality. And Matt's really written the playbook on that. We have a VP of marketing, Nate, who kind of leads the show on all things acquisition, retention, kind of has done an excellent job on that front. He joined us in January, so he's our most recent hire. Johnny runs retention and CX, and Johnny's kind of like, what's a whale term I can use? He, I guess, is the ultimate like whale breeder of sorts. So he's the one largely running the analytics on this front. He's a former banker, as am I. So again, like too much Excel man hours in here not to do deep dives, but he does an excellent job in really kind of teasing out like these early signs to figure out, hey, here are some of the similarities that we're seeing and how we can act upon that. And then we have a woman, Annie, who runs all of our social and brand kind of influencer partnerships and whatnot. So again, a pretty lean team, but that's the way we kind of like it, lean and mean. And I think we've been able to do a lot with a pretty small bench.
I guess so. There's a couple questions, one of which would be, I guess you're saying CX. So is he the only one that, like, how do you guys distribute even dealing with customer support?
Up until about 3 or 4 months ago, he was a one-man army on that front, which is incredibly impressive. He's really kind of taken that responsibility and run with it over the past 2 years, which has been awesome to see, especially for a brand that puts a ton of emphasis on CX and having the customer actually be the true North Star of the brand and the business. Since we started working with two freelance partners who are amazing, great understanding of tone of voice, great understanding of the notion of packing the customer's bags for them. So if we get an inbound around something potentially being not up to par or friction in the experience, you know, how can we turn that experience from, you know, a 6 to a 12? So that's just been something that's been really well orchestrated by Johnny and team. But yeah, I mean, that's a huge area for us. And we've since kind of bolstered that arm of the organization.
What's fascinating to me, I mean, besides the fact how lean you are. So my assumption too, is you've probably relied on like for branding and stuff. Did you use agencies for that? And you don't have any in-house engineers.
Yeah. So we did use an agency at the start. We've gone through kind of some iterations as brands do of kind of like less on visual aesthetic. I'd say more on kind of like tone of voice and speak. You know, I think for us, pushing pause on the word authenticity, because it's like the worst buzzword in D2C. We like to say relatable. I mean, we've been there. Like, I was the kid that grew up with bed skin. This has not historically been a fun category to talk about. Usually it's pretty awkward. There is a lot of problem solution in this category. My hair is thinning. I have really bad BO. I have acne or blemishes. Like, these aren't really dinner table conversations. So for us, kind of crafting this voice to create a very like open dialogue with a brand and like almost kind of like wearing the awkwardness as a brand and kind of on our own shoulders creates a little bit more of a comfort level with customers to ask these questions. And that's what we really like. And that's where we kind of thrive. So that's definitely been an important point of kind of like the brand maturation process, if you will. It's kind of just the evolution of speak. But overall, kind of visual aesthetics and other elements of the brand have remained pretty consistent.
Going back to, because you guys have been around for like 4.5 years, like were there certain plateaus and like how has your business changed or the way you've even thought about your business? How has that evolved since? Yeah, like were there certain like periods in your history that you look back on and like certain lessons you've learned?
So almost 3 years old. So we launched July 29th, 2019, Pushko at 10:42 a.m. Eastern time. So to the minute. So coming up on 3 years here, but tons of learnings. I mean, it was just Matt and myself for the first 8 months. Then we hired Johnny on March 4th of 2020. It was like, you know, we were supposed to go to the office that Monday, and it was like, hey, there's this COVID thing. Like, we'll see you in a week when this thing blows by. And then obviously 2+ years later. So that's certainly something that has been challenging. I think that's not just for us necessarily, but it's hard to kind of manage a small team and operate in tandem and work alongside of a few number of folks when there's just an inability to read body language, like an inability to just like have banter in office around like, hey, what do you think of X? Like, people don't want to hop on Zooms or Hangouts all the time to discuss these things. Now, there have been some efficiencies that we've certainly gained, but you know, as we've gotten back into the office over the past couple months, it's just been fun to like have these IRL conversations and strategic thought sessions and whatnot that I was craving kind of for during the thick of COVID that we were just fundamentally missing out on. So that for us has certainly been a challenge. I think one opportunity that's presented itself that's, again, probably not just a tailwind of ours, but you know, COVID was probably a net positive in terms of like business momentum for a lot of personal care and grooming categories. I'm not saying like COVID was a good thing. It was a horrible thing. But I think as people were in their apartments, in their homes, they began to self-reflect around, what am I eating every day? Like, what am I drinking every day? What am I actually using in the bathroom? Is like, this the best product? And I think it was a natural time for people to kind of push reset, experiment, et cetera. And I think a lot of the brands that were well-suited to position themselves, make themselves successful, be a few different distribution channels. It was a really, you know, it was a really positive time from a business standpoint.
And I guess going back, digging into like the sort of like, has it been just steady growth? Were there certain plateaus you guys had to overcome? And then what has the ride been like from a like user acquisition retention perspective?
We've been fortunate to be pretty much a steady grower really since launch. There haven't been massive jumps and then subsequent like fall offs or cliffs. You know, we've basically been month over month positive almost every month since launch. I mean, obviously there's natural points in the calendar, Black Friday, Cyber Monday. January is really big for this category, right? There's like an irrational, like, nope, this is my year, like starting fresh, here we go. So there's a lot of new year, new me.
That's funny. That's their New Year's resolution is more showers.
Totally. Or like, this is the year, like I'm leveling up my routine and whatnot. So, you know, those are certainly 2 points of the year where there's kind of some natural lift. But yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, very fortunate to have kind of steady growth throughout. I think one of the things for us that we learned pretty early on is Amazon for us was a really interesting channel. I think given our broader customer base, which is kind of, you know, the male consumer, 25 to 35, living in cities, not just New York and SF and LA, but Detroit, Atlanta, Dallas, Charlotte, Boston, Columbus, Pittsburgh, et cetera, you know, Amazon is kind of a really good option, right? If you're in need of hand soap and paper towels and toilet paper, like if you're right there with body wash at kind of digital point of sale, like it makes a lot of sense for the category. So I think the prevailing perspective on Amazon has certainly changed a lot over the years, where it went from being brand dilutive because you don't own all the customer data to we want product in as many people's hands as possible. So you kind of choose your own channel, and we want to be there to make sure that we can offer our assortment.
Have there been any negatives from your perspective of including Amazon? And was that something where, I'll say, how early or how late into your business did you incorporate Amazon?
So we launched in February of 2020, actually. So really right before COVID, which again was like timing-wise, like ended up working out quite well because Amazon became the most reliant retailer, right? During, especially in the early parts of 2020. So that was very interesting timing for us. I mean, there are certainly some downsides. I mean, Amazon is a behemoth, and at times working with them can be difficult. You know, there is certainly elements where we certainly wish we had customer emails of who's buying the stuff. But again, even if we were to turn on a massive wholesale account, we wouldn't know that customer's email either, right? So, you know, I think there people view Amazon in kind of an unfair lens through which they don't view traditional wholesale, right? It's like, oh, you don't have any customer information. Well, you don't have any customer information from a large wholesale account either. So, you know, what's really the difference? Certainly points of friction, of course, but you know, for us, it's been a really efficient and a really strong scaling channel.
Cool. Well, I was going to say one thing I like to ask is, do you have a big ask? Like, is there something you can put out into the internet that if it were solved for you, I mean, it could be personal, it could be for business, but yeah, if what's something that would like change the course of your life or your business? You just kind of put out there.
Wow. This is definitely a first time question. Ooh, big ask. I mean, obviously being able to collect more data points in and around net new eyeballs, right? I mean, like any brand, our conversion rate, unfortunately, isn't 100%. So that means there are people who end up on our site who don't make a purchase and we have no idea who they are. It's a constant battle to collect information without being intrusive and kind of further understand how people are getting to the site. So I don't really know what the ask is necessarily, but if someone wants to create a tool that will help us identify who these net new visitors are, who maybe aren't purchasing or signing up for email flows or whatnot, that would be amazing. That's obviously like a total Hail Mary, but I think that's something where, you know, for me, even looking at email, like the one of the funny things we banter around internally, like baseball and email are the only time or the only things in the world where you celebrate like a 33% success rate. So for a conversion rate, like obviously it's a fraction of that. So just figuring out how do we get more people not only exposed to the brand, but then understanding how we can talk to them and communicate with them about the brand in a way that would ultimately resonate at a personal level. We don't want people just buying face wash. We want people buying from Huron because they feel like they're a part of the journey, because they feel like they understand the brand, because they feel like the brand resonates with them at some level. I think a lot of our efforts are in and around the humanization of brand. This is not just a millennial pink brand that's kind of like has thrown a bunch of stuff in a tube that hopes to make money off you first purchase. We want you to be a lifelong customer of ours. So understanding like, how can we tell you about the brand, about the products, et cetera, again, that will resonate at a slightly more personal level is something that we're really excited about. That was a multi-part ask, I think.
No, but it's good. I think that you gave a bunch of sort of feelers out there. And I think I mentioned to you before the call, like blackcrow.ai is a tool that I've gotten to know one of the founders fairly well. And I know a bunch of D2C brands that work with them, and it's, I don't know if it's, it would solve your exact question, but I'd be curious, A, maybe we can revisit this conversation and hopefully either someone who's listening or maybe potentially even the intro to Black Crow, you know, we can solve that for you because that'd be dope.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and it sounds like the work that they're doing in and around kind of like personalization of experience or a slightly more tailored experience is something that we're all kind of yearning for to some extent. So it sounds like, you know, what they're doing is pretty interesting and exciting.
So their pitch is they predict, Black Crow AI predicts every visitor's future value in real time as they shop, right? So that's, I guess that's a separate question from you're actually wanting to understand who are these people? Why are they not purchasing? So that you can get better insight into understanding of who's actually ending up on your site. Is that, did I suss that out correctly? Like that's the sort of intent behind it?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, but I think the one degree of separation is probably what Black Crow's currently offering, which is like assortment merchandising and stuff to make sure that like hopefully we can tailor a better experience and show something that might resonate with the customer on a product level that will help create that longer term relationship.
Awesome. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd love to throw out there?
We talked a little bit about the importance of testing site and curating and understanding products that are selling through well, that are resonating with some of these whale customers on our end, for instance. I think there's been a lot of emphasis over the past few weeks in and around like, oh, the acquisition world is melting. Like, what are we going to do? Immediately, we're in cash conservation mode. There's a lot of other areas of focus that can command your attention that are going to continue to move the ball forward and the business forward if given the right amount of thought. So it could be from the retention side of things. It could be in and around site testing at an extremely granular level. And we're not talking about is the add to cart button red versus blue, but it's like, are we swapping out homepage hero for these three products and like pushing the purchase opportunity higher in the funnel? How does that compare or test against status quo, right? So there's a lot of micro testing that I think a lot of brands can and should be doing that I don't know if they are. And I think, again, that's a way to continue to move the needle in a challenging acquisition environment. So how are you continuing to create a really positive customer experience and making the most of those experiences because maybe they're fewer and further between than maybe what they were otherwise in a super healthy acquisition environment?
Cool, man. Hey, if people want to find you online, where should they go?
Probably Twitter is the easiest, just at Matt Mullenix. I would say I'm more of like a Twitter observer than like a participant. I've like been trying to be better about participating, but I mean, there's such a wealth of knowledge that people share. There's at times you have to understand the iceberg theory is very much at play. You know, people tout about how swimmingly things are going at times, but you only get half the story, if that. So I think understanding that that ecosystem operates in that manner is important. But there's a lot of great people that I've met on that platform, and a lot of folks that I think they're doing pretty amazing things. And it's been great to learn from them, and always happy to, you know, strike up a dialogue and chat with folks offline as well.
Well, awesome. And we'll put in your, we'll put your Twitter handle into the show notes, and obviously link back to your site and stuff. So Matt, thanks a lot for being on the show, man. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben, for having me.